Monday morning meeting of the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government, and we have before us the pleasure of doing and looking at the Department of Administrative Services budget this year, this month, this day, and will be for the next 2 weeks. And with us we have to start off and lead off with Director Lindsay Ball. And we are off and running and underway. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please. If you would,
thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just briefly, once again, your support, the overview document that was presented to you when we did the informational hearing is under agency summary in your agency budget presentation binders that we passed out to you on Friday. And then I believe tabs in the sequence of the scheduled hearings for the meeting. This is an agency that provides support for other state and other governmental units, cities and counties, and others also use their services, procurement, printing, even vehicle leasing. Its fund sources are generally assessments and fees for services from agencies, and the director will go into the question you posed about the impact on general fund and the other from its funding sources. Very little general fund is with this agency. I did want to point out, I handed at each of your places is a graph. It should be under the bill right in front of you. You'll find your daily agenda, copy of the bill, and some other. This graph portrays the department's budget from 1999-01 through the governor's recommended budget for this session. Anyway, the darker ones are the agency's budget without debt service. The lighter columns are the agency's budget with debt service. You'll notice there's a marked difference between the two, due in large measure to the recession of 2001-03. We issued about $435 million of appropriations bonds that are being paid for out of Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement amounts this biennium. That amount is about $122 million. In 2003, the voters approved use of pension obligation bonds to cut down on the cost of the public employees' retirement system contributions. Debt service on that amounts to about $258 million this biennium. So those are the major drivers for that increase in debt service. And the debt service is housed in the Department of Administrative Services. Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement funds will pay the appropriations bonds, assessments from state agencies, and other agencies that benefited from the issuance of these bonds. Lottery, for example, Safe Corporation, those agencies are invoiced and pay their pro rata share of the debt service. So I just wanted to point that out, give you a better perspective of the change in the operating costs of the agency. So that's my brief overview. We are scheduling, there's 2 weeks of public hearings on this. You'll notice on the handout we gave you, the chair has scheduled public testimony for this week, Thursday, which tends to follow what's been some items of interest with the data center and a proposed geospatial information system. And there will be people interested in providing public testimony on that next week. Then we'll schedule public testimony on Wednesday, which is at the end of the operational and pass-through costs for the agency. We've scheduled Thursday for, included in this agency's budget, is a grant to Oregon Public Broadcasting. And Thursday, there will be, again, public testimony for that. And so that is the schedule for the overview, and then we're looking at the work session meeting about a week and a half following, after we've accumulated all the information, have the feedback from the like. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's my brief intro.
Very good. You're 5 minutes ahead of what you were scheduled to have, so that gives the director an extra 5 minutes to listen to our questions. Good morning.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. some of the things that we, some of the protocols we thought we'd follow, Mr. Chair, with your permission, is that any questions that come from the previous meeting, we would try to answer those up front at the next meeting. Last week you asked some questions about the percentage of funds that come to DAS that make up the assessments. Before we handed out a letter to you this morning responding to that question, and general fund in the way, now this is assessments, this is not rents or fees that are charged, but the assessments amount to general fund $124.7 million at 38.4%, lottery funds $3.4 million at 1.1%, other funds $140.8 million at 43.2%, federal funds $56.1 million at 17.3%. Those are the percentage breakdowns and the amounts associated with assessments that are charged to agencies for services by the Department of Administrative Services. And we don't have specific detail, Mr. Chair, about how much general fund comes from each agency. We don't have the information available to us at this time to accomplish that.
I understand. We'll perhaps pursue that more as we deal with some of the other agencies that come in. Thank you.
A little bit more about some of the protocols and explain the budget book that you have in front of you. They're double-sided tabbed so that you can look at the book immediately and come to the subject area. They are page numbered consecutively from page 1 through 464. So in the next 2 weeks, there's 464 pages here that we'll be reviewing. Some of that we can, maybe with your permission, we can move right along. If we dwell on some of it, I think we'll find ourselves here more than 2 weeks. We'll certainly make sure that you get the information that you need to as you deliberate over this budget. It's a very thorough document. I think you're going to find it very informative as we move along. And that is one of the challenges that we've heard from legislators over the years. What is it that the Department of Administrative Services does? And I hope that we can resolve some of those issues, concerns, and answer questions about what this agency does. So it is a thorough document. With that, Mr. Chair, I can move into...
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as Mr. Ball was sort of setting the background, but I've had the opportunity to do this budget since I've been in the legislature, and this might be a good time for Lindsay to also share, particularly with the new members, a little bit of history about this agency. I know that Director Ball believes that one of the highest values that he can bring is longevity of service so that it's stabilized. But would you mind reviewing just over the past, let's say since 2000, how many directors there have been and how much change has been in the agency?
Good thing.
Could you put the microphone a little closer, Lindsay? Oh. I'm hard time getting on the tape. I'm sorry.
Does that come through better? Okay, good. Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, well... If we go back to year 2000, Mike Greenfield was the director of the Department of Administrative Services, and he was the director up until year 2003. Gary Weeks was the director for about a year. Now, these are approximations. I can't give you start dates, end dates. Then Teresa McHugh was the director. And then she moved to the governor's office, and Lori Warner was the acting director. And I became the director January of 2006. So there's been quite a lot of change within the agency. There's been different budget and management directors, administrators, different deputies, and different agency heads for the Department of Administrative Services over the last 5 years at a fairly high rate of turnover. I think everyone can recognize that there is some problems associated with that type of turnover, And some of those challenges that we have in service delivery, I think, have been a result of that type of turnover in the department.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure, particularly, that Mr. Ball understands my motivation for asking the question. Was not to cast any aspersions on the agency, but was to merely point out the amount of turnover and the need to kind of get the agency stabilized. It's my opinion, under your leadership, that will occur. But I just, particularly for the new folks, wanted to point that out as a challenge for the agency.
Thank you, Senator. I think that is a comment that was well worthwhile for everyone to hear, to know and understand that the agency has been in a constant state of flux until Mr. Ball came on, and we hope he'll stay around for a while to finish up some of the chores that he's gotten stuck with.
Mr. Chair, there's one other thing. I don't know if it's bothering other people besides the staff and me, but there's a very high-pitched reverberation back through somewhere.
Yeah, I'm hearing it, too, but about to drive me crazy.
Is there something with this microphone that's...
Push it back a little bit. Or if someone has a BlackBerry on, that can happen. Or if it's close to the mic.
Shut everything off, in other words, that you might have on.
Like
me too.
Is that better?
One of the things the chair might remind everyone that he's got this thing stuck in his ear. Every time you touch or move that mic or anything close to it, it screeches through into my computer bank up there.
Okay, we ready to proceed?
Please.
My task before you today is to give you an overview of the Director's Office of the Department of Administrative Services. The purpose of the office is to provide central administration for all executive branch agencies, promote internal and external communications to other state agencies, policymakers, and the staff within DAS, coordinate legislative activities both statewide and for the department. We seek feedback to monitor progress on the strategic plan. The office includes the staff of the Office of Economic Analysis, which provides the economic forecast that this body depends on as they deliberate the final stages of the budget, as well as population forecasts for Department of Corrections and Oregon Youth Authority. The Chief Audit Executive reports directly to me and supports the DAS Internal Audit Committee and the Statewide Audit Advisory Committee. And I might mention, too, Mr. Wyan sits on that Statewide Audit Advisory Committee as well, as we deliberate policy for auditing in the state of Oregon. On page 48, you'll see an organizational chart of the director's office. Straightforward structure of a director, deputy director, administrative support for the two of us, the Office of Economic Analysis, Internal Audits, and Public Affairs. We touched on major accomplishments at the previous session for 05-07. I will briefly touch on those once again. We completed a six-year strategic plan for the agency, a document that I hope you had some time to look over. We truly mean that we're going to be leaders in the pursuit of excellence in state government, as our mission depicts. We've involved our stakeholders in our operations through policymaking and budget building this last year. We've moved the computing and networking infrastructure, Scenic, from a project status to an operational status. We have one agency yet to bring in, and we're deliberating over some legal issues associated with that and retention of records, as I explained earlier. We reorganized the Information Resource Management Division so that we could better serve the state of Oregon from an enterprise perspective on information technology. We promoted fiscal integrity, and we've instituted new budget review and decision-making tools to ensure that all programs operate within budget and approved authority, and we've accomplished that task this last biennium. We've developed a leadership team in this agency. Those people will be coming before you to give you a brief on their program areas. I'm sure you're going to find that they're a very proactive, collaborative, problem-solving group of people. We've implemented the Safety and Wellness Leadership Initiative, which is a way to not only save the state money through risk assessment or risk management worker injury claims, but it's also a way to create a wellness and health within our employees. And we've also advanced the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network. I've mentioned the strategic plan several times, particularly at the last meeting. I'll touch on the four primary goals: excellent customer service, effective policies with clear direction, efficient and effective government infrastructure, and adaptable government for future generations. On page 52, the first part of that is customer service. I touched extensively on a customer service survey last time. I just want to bring that to your attention because we look forward to getting the results this coming year to see how we've progressed this last year. Effective policies with clear direction.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Ball, who do you consider your customers?
The term customer is used fairly loosely by a number of people, as it has been by me, Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson. We have a number of customers. Our primary customer for this agency are the agency directors and the agencies. The ultimate customer is always the public that we serve.
And follow, Mr. Chair. So your survey instrument, I presume, goes both directions?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, the primary target of the customer service survey are the agencies and the program areas within that agency.
Can I follow on that? How much contact do you have with the general public in your agency? Do you have any measure of that?
Chair Jensen, we don't have a lot of contact with the public in the Department of Administrative Services compared to agencies that I've been in previous, such as the Department of Fish and Wildlife, Department of State Police, Department of Ag, Department of Forestry, where those are a direct service agency to an industry or the public. Our program area, you know, specifically focuses and is tied to central government administration. And so, consequently, our day-to-day activities don't interact a lot with the general public.
Can you add that just a moment, Mr. Bob? While I think I understand the nature of that, I would hope that the agency wouldn't get, slack or with their treatment of the general public if and when they have an opportunity, in light of the fact that that's the group that comes back to harass us, both in terms of what they have to say about budgets or revenue-raising measures that we have, and what they have to say about the legislature and everything in government reflects, throughout our society. One of my complaints or my concerns has, since I've been here, and perhaps before that, is the communication with the general public. Government is not real good at writing letters to the general public. They're very good at writing letters with legalese in it, but not real good at relating to the general public out there. So I would hope, even though you don't have a lot of contact with them, that you wouldn't lose sight of the importance of that contact when you do have it. Senator Johnson.
I think maybe Dallas wants to jump in ahead of me.
Just going back to the community. If anyone in here has a communications device that is turned on, would you please turn it off? We've contacted our media folks, and they believe that the feedback is coming from a communications device that is turned on.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, if you'll indulge me. Let me be real specific about one instance that's just come to my attention, and it's in DSL. I've raised this with the director, Ms. Soliday, and she said she would look into it. But it was a situation where the Division of State Lands had been given very specific instruction from the legislature to bring their leases into compliance. So there had been basically a decade-long hiatus, and all of a sudden aggressive enforcement by the agency, giving people 30 days to respond. And I'm trained as a lawyer. I read the letter. Obviously, a lawyer read it. But instead of paving the way for a dialogue with people who were not in compliance with leases, it paved the way for enormous animosity. People came to the table to negotiate with DSL already furious, and perhaps could have been ameliorated by a letter that was just a little less lawyerly. And I understand that tension between trying to preserve the state's rights in causing enforcement to occur, but also trying to bring friendly negotiators to the table instead of just whacking them right from the get-go, and they come mad and get madder. And I just offer that as a very specific example that recently happened. I'd be happy to copy you with the letters.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's a perfect segue into the question that I have, Mr. Ball, and that is with regards to the customer service. Does the department provide a training program? Because I see here that it says to provide legislative and communications training for state agencies, and to provide, which tells me that the agency teaches your agency teaches other agencies how to come and talk to me and convince me that whatever it is that they want is the right thing to do, and provide support and guidance to other state agencies, media relations, which tells me that you train their media people in terms of how to write a decent press release so that maybe the point gets across depending on what the press chooses to do with it, which of course, being the fourth estate, we know that they do whatever they want to with those press releases. But my question is does the agency provide a customer service training to the other agencies so that when you're at a person walks into a DHS office, for example, instead of being treated as though they are an interruption to the person's day that's there really to help them, they're treated with respect, to find out what their needs are, and then to start the process of helping them get through meeting those needs. And it's not just the receptionists, although they play a major role in this, but it's everybody in the agencies. One agency that will remain unnamed, one time when I went in there, it was, you're quite frankly a pain in the backside, and I'd rather you weren't here. The next time I went in, the exact same person, it was a 180-degree turnaround. Somebody did some training in that agency, and now when you go in there, I kind of like going in there because but I don't go in there more often than I need to, just because I don't want to be a pain in the backside.
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, I think the question, just correct me if I'm wrong, is do we provide training to agencies on customer service?
Correct.
The response to that is we've had a number of discussions at our agency head meeting, which we convene once every 2 weeks, and over the last year I've had a number of discussions with agency directors emphasizing the importance of customer service delivery to the citizens of the state. What is it that we do in state government, and how do we provide that service? And truly, in my estimation, government exists to provide a service to the public. And that is pretty much the short answer of where I'm coming from. Chair Jensen, your comment about not forgetting the public, one of the things that I've noted and I've talked about many times when people ask me about this job that I have compared to other jobs I've had, one of the missing components is the ease of access that I have to the public today. I don't hear from the public. Very rarely in this agency, in my position, do I hear from a member of the public. When I've been in other positions, as I mentioned earlier, I was talking to the public consistently and constantly. We're just insulated. and how you keep in mind that citizen out there still exists when you're a central service delivery agency is more of a challenge than it is if you're sitting in an agency that has a direct service to the public.
Precisely my point.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very much aware of that.
Senator Hudson.
Chair Jensen, thank you. I have a couple of questions, Mr. Ball. First, on the reorganization of the RRMD to the EISPD, there's about 188 employees were terminated from the first agency and moved. And there's a reduction of about 188 FTE in that process. And I was wondering, it appears that quite a number of them were moved to the state data center. So I was wondering, and the state data center underestimated their budget by $7.4 million for personal services. I was wondering if that is related to hiring people at a higher level than you anticipated in order to maintain their employment in the agency, or whether that was related to reclassification increases in compensation, or what. And I don't expect you to know that off the top of your head, but I would like to know the answer to that. And then the second question has to do with your bonding. And it would appear that I would think that the cost of amortization of those prison bonds and the appropriation bonds would be fairly stable, and yet there's a $33 million increase between the legislative approved budget in 2005-07 and the governor's recommended budget. And I'm having trouble getting my hands around what would cause a $33 million increase in the cost of servicing bonds that should have a pretty level amortization.
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, to get clarification on your first question, I think there might be some confusion over the dissolution of IRMD and the creation of the Enterprise Information Strategy and Policy Division with 188 employees. I think you're conflicting the Information Resource Management Division moving to Enterprise Information Strategy and Policy Division with the Scenic Project and the State Data Center. I think that is because the numbers are more consistent with the Scenic Project than, in your question, than with the IRMD. Am I making any sense for you at all?
It appears that most or of those 188 employees that were shifted out of that of the IRMD were maintained within your organization. They were shifted to other, transferred, terminated, rehired. I don't know what the right terminology there is. And I was noticing that within the state data center, there was an increase of 55 employees there. I guess what I'm asking for is a tracking of that 188 employees that were moved out of the IRMD and the increased cost of any in rehiring them or reassigning them to a different location within the agency.
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, I think it would be good if we could get with you after the committee hearing here, just make sure that your numbers are lining up with our numbers and I understand exactly what your question is, because I'm a little bit confused yet as to the reclassifications and the 188 and such, but we can get together so I can see the same documents that you're looking at and we can I can understand where you're coming from and what your question is.
I appreciate that.
Okay. And then there was a second question.
On the bonds.
On the bonds. We'll get that answer for you.
I think I can help with that one. The debt service on the pension obligation bonds in particular tracks with payroll. It was designed that way. So it is expected to go up as it's designed to be about a stable percent of payroll, but as payroll would grow with inflation and the like, the debt service on that is going to track a little higher from the prior biennium if you're looking at the debt service on the pension obligation bonds. The other debt service, there's about there has been additional debt issued by the agency, three facilities. One of them is the data center to construct that, to construct the North Mall office building, I think it's called North Mall, and also to construct a special facility owned by DAS but used now by the Department of DEQ and the health, the lab. So there's construction there. Also, there's some additional debt service for COPs issued for transition costs related to the data center that will be paid off in a more over less than the 20 years that, or 30 years that buildings are paid off. So some there two the debt service related to operations of the agency has increased somewhat, and in large part due to the data center, those three new facilities, transition costs of the data center, and the three new buildings. The other debt service with respect to the pension obligation bonds is the indenture agreement tracks with is to fund that debt service, or to the debt service will increase gradually over time and be paid off in greater amounts as state payroll is expected to increase. That was done to align the debt service costs with the associated costs that we were going to be expecting to pay into PERS on payroll, or the it's pro rata share or a percent of payroll, and as payroll increases because of inflation or other reasons, the debt service associated with those bonds is expected to increase. I can hope that helps.
That's for your it's the interest on the larger principal.
That's correct.
Please proceed, Lindsay, and I note that the 5 minutes that we gave you in extra has long since disappeared. And
we'll move right along, sir. Effective policies with clear direction from the strategic plan on page 53. We'll just move through that quickly. Efficient and effective government infrastructure. We've talked about that at the previous meeting. If there are any questions, we'll certainly get back to you. On page 55, it's adaptable government for future generations. We get into the performance measures. I do wish to remind everyone there are 16 performance measures, 8 of which are new, that went through the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and also E-Board and were approved. I briefed you on those at our last meeting. If there are any questions, I'd sure respond to those now or at a later time. On page 67, or excuse me, on page 66, we have the division performance measures. The director's office has adopted performance measures within the office designed to provide information about director's office management to our customers. Percent of customers who rate director's office customer service as good or excellent, our target is 90%. Overall, just to be reminded, our customer service survey indicated we were about 70% in 2005. Percent of survey respondents who rate policy, clarity, direction, and involvement practices as good or excellent. That's a new measure for the director's office that will be included in the 2007 survey. I want to make sure that agencies feel comfortable that they are a participant in the creation of the policies and budgets. Percent of performance appraisals completed on time. I expect 100% from the management staff in this agency to have performance evaluations done on employees. We had gotten somewhat lax on that in the past. And the number of workers' compensation claims per 100 FTE. We're striving for 100 or for 0 per 100 FTE in the director's office. Our prioritized list for 2007-09 in the director's office for funding. Number one is the director's office administration, tied to a key performance measure number one. Second is the Office of Economic Analysis, associated with Key Performance 2. Third is Internal Audit Section, tied to Key Performance Number 1. And Highway Cost Allocation Study is the fourth, and it is also tied to Number 1.
Yes, sir, Chair.
Senator Johnson.
This is actually a question of Dallas as far as how the presentation of the prioritized lists are going to go this year. It appears in this notebook that they're broken out by program area, and I don't know whether it will be available at some point, all of the prioritization across program area on a single display.
Yes, we will have that. And I'm getting hand signs. I thought it was presented earlier, page 23 in the summary. The overview, I believe, that was presented last week.
Mr. Wyand, Chair Jensen, I don't think the senator was here at that first meeting, so she just hadn't had the opportunity to see that.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Page 68, Budget Drivers. Director's office provides leadership and guidance to 9 divisions, 2 offices, and 2 boards, and we support the statutory obligations of statewide administrative services and systems such as accounting, budgeting, deferred maintenance, facilities planning, and procurement. Fees and assessments, a portion of the director's office program is funded through service charges to other agencies. These service charges are based on a flat rate per full-time equivalent position. The Oregon Department of Transportation pays for highway cost allocation study and a general fund appropriation finance associated with prison population forecasting. On page 70, you have a pie chart that shows the services and supplies and the personal services. On page 71, you have a budget overview of the director's office budget with general funds and other funds limited. On page 72, quality improvement efforts. We increased the use of direct deposit, having us 30% savings over processing warrants in the agency. Use of alternative fuels for fleet, projected savings for 05-07 is $250,000. Strategic sourcing through Smart Buy Initiative. New contract for digital print equipment saves about $65,000. Improved rent projections will allow the 2007-09 uniform rent rates to stay at the current rate. One of the things that we did that I think is important to note for quality in the agency is that we evaluated ourselves as to the accuracy of our assessments to agencies for fees. And we came up with a savings here for the state of Oregon. Implementation of PEB benefits has reduced PEB dot benefits has reduced printed and mailed documents by 60%, creating a savings. E-mailing benefit information to PEB members has reduced printing and mailing by 50%. PEB incentives for encouraging generic and lower-cost drugs has increased members' use of low-cost alternatives from 54.7% in 2005 to 63.5% the first half of 2006. E-government transactions for 2005.
I'm sorry to jump from 100,000 feet down into this incredible minutia, but I'm just trying to find out what kind of incentives, and maybe just putting the PEP folks on notice, what kind of incentives to encourage generic and lower-cost drugs? I mean, that is not a giant spread, and it's a long ways away from 100%. So I'm trying to figure out, are the incentives not sufficiently attractive, or the numbers just strike me as a little odd. If there was an opportunity to save money, to bring it up to 100% use of generics or lower cost drugs. I'm just curious why.
Chair Jensen and Senator Johnson, we'll get that answer to you tomorrow morning. We'll have that detailed out for you.
And one other one, as long as we've broken for a question. The Smart Buy Initiative under back through prior biennia has always been a kind of a question mark about what demonstrable proof is there that Smart Buy is working. That was somewhat controversial, as I understand it, when it was implemented. And you're tracking savings through Smart Buy specifically, or how do you know that the initiative is successful?
Chair Jensen and Senator Johnson, much to Representative Kremel's credit for questioning Smart Buy and the validity of the savings associated with that, and a lot of that stems from Representative Kremel's notation that when Smart Buy was created, there was a projected savings of, correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Kremel, of like something like $250 million or something like that.
Well, the Mr. Chair, if I may, because of the press that had been done and some statements by one of the former directors, it appeared as though that we were looking at somewhere between $250 and $500 million in savings. Of course, in the 05 session, we were able to identify in the audits committee a total of $11 million that had been saved, which is a far cry from even $250 million. So we were only $239 million short on savings, but the agency has been correcting some of those things so that they can identify where the savings really are, what the costs of procurements would have been, for example, without the Smart Buy, and what the costs have been with the Smart Buy. So they've cleaned that up, or they're working on cleaning that up quite a bit.
Thank you.
As long as we're writing this, did you have more on that particular point?
A few comments, Chair, if I may. The savings associated with certain projects with the Department of Administrative Services over the last 3 or 4 years, I think, has the announced savings of different programs and projects has created a somewhat of a debacle, because the savings that were announced and professed to be in the future never materialized. For whatever reasons, I didn't go back in history to try to dig it out as to why they came up with those projections, but the simple fact was it weren't accurately depicted. But what we have been able to do is to illustrate that those programs do generate some savings for the state of Oregon, and savings that I think are sufficient to warrant continuation of those program areas. Now, with Smart Buy specifically, we contract with a private firm to audit that program to see if we're still tracking a savings, and the report from that group has demonstrated that we are. Not as great as what was first projected. I think near what Representative Kremel mentioned of $11 million, maybe a little bit more than that. We can get those figures for you without any trouble, what the latest have been. The legislative branch audited that program this last summer and fall and found that it was a savings to the state of Oregon. So I feel fairly comfortable that Smart Buy does deliver a savings. I think the expectation that was created of somewhere, up to $500 million savings was inaccurate. And I can't explain the reason why, but I can't explain that savings that we have today I don't think should be looked upon as an inefficient program. I think it's a savings to the state, money that we can use elsewhere, and we should continue it.
If I can, I think that we back up to the use of alternative fuels for a state fleet. I think your office provided me some information on that. I think a copy of that document to the committee might be in order as we go through the budget. And if I could, with that, again, I think in order to look at the actual projected savings on that particular issue, we certainly have to factor in the increased cost of the purchase of the vehicles that are using or that are making that saving for us, plus the subsidy that we're paying to the alternative fuels industry, or I call it a subsidy, since it's the cost of production of that and the cost of sale of it, would be more than the cost for the petrol fuels as such. So it's an area that I think would be worthwhile for us to have an additional look at on the committee.
Chair Jensen, would you like more information beyond what you were briefed on yesterday?
Yes.
Okay.
And not yesterday, but
Last week sometime. I'm sorry, it wasn't yesterday. You're right.
Mr. Chair, I know that Mr. Ball is going to get to the PEB benefits thing here, PEB.benefits thing here. One question that I would like to put them on notice about to discuss when they come in to discuss the PEB program is with the regards to the web the web-based program for signing up and that sort of thing. The big question is, have they made it actually more user-friendly than it was? Because the last time I went on to use it, it was not user-friendly. And I can imagine other people that are as technologically illiterate as I am may have had some real difficult problems with it and not being able to get where it says that you need to get in order to make sure that you are, in fact, signed up. Sometimes technology, while it can be a time saver, can be a pain. So that would be one question that I would like to have answered during those discussions. Okay.
Chair Jensen, Representative Cremel, we have improved that, and I'm sure Gene Thorne, the program administrator, can give us some more of the details.
Thank you.
Continuing then, Mr. Chair, on page 74, e-government transactions grew for 2005, grew by 30% over 2004. Each transaction at current volume represents a savings cost avoidance of nearly $5 per transaction. We reorganized IRMD at a savings of $2.9 million to state agencies. We purchased packages of internet advertising for statewide recruitment savings of $105,000. Recruitment's moving away from print media to online advertising, increased exposure and saving $227,000. Future direction, we evaluate statewide administrative organizations and systems for maximum value of government service to the public. Through recruitment, statewide policy review, performance measures with budgeting, deferred maintenance and facilities management, consolidation of IT enterprise, and we continue to drive the strategic plan and its four goals within the agency. Package 451 on page 78 is a transfer of a support position in the director's office. It transfers one administrative support position from the director's office to budget management, placing the position into the same budget structure as its manager. Package 452, IRMD reorganization. This package transfers one position from IRMD to the director's office under the DAS public affairs manager. $172,783 of other funds will be transferred to the director's office and will be funded within the statewide assessment of the director's office. And finally, on page 78, the 2% efficiencies, eliminating one position in the director's office that's a support person. That impact would reduce responses to customers in a timely way, and it can also lower customer service survey results because of that lack of service. That concludes my director's office program report and overview of the budget. Are there any questions, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on this last one, when you talk about peak demand periods, are those predictable? I mean, is there a certain time that you would consider a peak demand period?
Chair Jensen, Representative Beyer, a good example is when the budget is being put together by the Department of Administrative Services as a demand. Basically, that runs from June through December of the year previous to the legislature convening. That is a heavy demand period for that agency. Another could be when we're putting together an economic forecast on a quarterly basis. There are duties that would be assigned at that time. And then there are other things that come up. For instance, to me, since I came to the division or to the agency in the director's office, we have initiated a lot for lack of better terms, I guess, not maybe overhaul is not the best way to describe it, but certainly more administrative detail. Under my direction, like the e-government committee, the safety wellness program, all those kinds of things start in the director's office and requires support staff to help administer those throughout state government. Those are demanding on staff time, and those are some of the things that would fall short if that position was eliminated.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe we are on to the Oregon Progress Board, and Rita Conrad is with us. Thank you. Good morning, Rita.
Good morning.
Mr. Chair, before I turn this over to Rita, I do want to point out a couple things that we've changed with respect to the Progress Board and Ways and Means process. To our best recollection, this is, in anyone's memory that I have talked to, this is the first time that the Progress Board has come before a committee to deliberate their budget. We think that this is an important aspect of what the state is pursuing, and we certainly wanted to have this discussion with you today. So it's kind of a first time for Rita and certainly the Progress Board. So with that, I'll turn it over to Rita.
Are you asking us, Director Ball, to be kind to Rita then this morning as we break her in to this process?
Chair Jensen, pour it on. She'll be fine.
Thank you, Lindsay, Chair Jensen, and the committee. The purpose of the Oregon Progress Board is to make Oregon Shines a reality and benchmarks useful tools for Oregonians working to improve their communities. I will explain what Oregon Shines and the benchmarks are as we go through the presentation. We don't have a complicated organizational chart on page 80. We have 1.75 FTEs budgeted to the Oregon Progress Board. Board membership is the governor, who's statutorily the chair of the Progress Board, 9 members appointed by the governor, which represent the congressional districts across the state of Oregon, 1 senator appointed by the president of the Senate, and 1 representative appointed by the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and of course Senator Schrader and Representative Butler are currently on the Progress Board. Major accomplishments for 2005 and 07. One of the things we're most proud of is creating a set of customized county slideshows that provide bar charts for each county on about 30 Oregon benchmarks, trends over time on how they're doing, for example, in teen pregnancy, poverty, that kind of thing. We've also created what we call county comparator maps, where a county can open up from our website a map of, for example, teen pregnancy and see how they're doing against other, compared to other counties in the state. So they're color-coded red, green, yellow, that kind of thing. We've created the 2006 county data book, which is basically a text format of the maps and the slideshows, and the 2006 race and ethnicity report, which looks at many of the benchmarks by race and ethnicity. We have updated the 2007 and 2009 key performance measure guidelines, and the forms that you're seeing in your notebooks are forms that the Progress Board worked in collaboration with LFO and BAM to update this last time around to try to make them a little easier to use. We are about ready to bring over to Ways and Means Senator Schrader a series of what we call benchmark agency key performance measure crosswalks, which helps you see at a glance which agencies are linking to Oregon benchmarks with each of their key performance measures, and there's one packet for each committee that we will deliver on February 1st. That was the promise I gave Senator Schrader. The anticipated completion of the 2007 benchmark performance report, which is a biennial flagship report that we put out, will come out in March. And we're also unveiling this biennium for the first time, if all goes well, an online benchmark reporting system that will reduce data lag. So we're excited about that and be a little bit more user-friendly.
Sure.
How cooperative are the counties being?
How cooperative?
In providing you data.
The counties don't necessarily provide us data for the benchmarks. They are the recipients of the data for the benchmarks. We get the data from a variety of state agencies and reports, national reports.
And what's your metric to see if the counties are using the data or that your report becomes a doorstop?
Good question. We don't have adequate metrics on that. We do know that many of the counties have contacted us and appreciated the county data we put out, but we don't have metrics on that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Then who are your customers?
Our customers are counties are a significant aspect of that. We work with the Association of Oregon Counties. And in the ultimate sense, Oregonians, as you'll see when I talk about Oregon Shines, are our customers. It's hard to pin down. Also, state agencies, the staff that work with the key performance measure system, we have been providing services to for about 4 or 5 years.
One more follow-up. Mm-hmm. If the counties are your customers and you don't have a metric to judge how well your customers are using your data, does that not represent a pretty significant disconnect?
It is a disconnect. We've tried to parse information from website hits on people, counties that use our information. I would add, I guess I do have a little bit more information on that. We work closely with the Oregon Commission on Children and Families in working with their local comprehensive plans, the required local comprehensive plans for children and families. And we do know that that planning process, which works directly with counties, relies heavily on benchmark data. So in that sense, I know that. We just don't have metrics. We don't have a percentage of counties that are using Oregon benchmark data, although I can say that when it comes to children and families planning at the local level, all the counties use the benchmarks because they're required by the Partners for Children and Families process.
Mr. Chair, what I'm getting at then, is if that is in fact the case, shouldn't this be something Commission on Children and Families pays for?
I'm not I don't know how to answer that question.
I just
I'm sorry.
Leave it as a rhetorical question.
Okay, page 83. Progress board, I'm going to back up now and tell you a little bit about Oregon Shines, the benchmarks, and the key performance system. These are the three broad categories of work that the progress board does. Page 84, you'll see the basic kind of big picture description of Oregon Shines. We, as far as we understand, Oregon was the first state in the union to create a statewide big picture strategic vision for the state. This plan, or strategic vision is a better word for it, is for all of Oregon and all Oregonians, not just state government. It engages Oregonians in its development. Oregon Shines 2 particularly was very active in conducting regional hearings and meetings to get Oregonians, civic leaders' input on Oregon Shines 2. There have been two versions of Oregon Shines. The first one came out in 1989, and the second one came out in 1997, Oregon Shines 2. We're beginning to get ready to launch the process for Oregon Shines 3. And the anticipated release of that will be February 14th, 2009, which is Oregon's sesquicentennial, 150th birthday. And we're working with the governor's Oregon 150 group to coincide our work, to coordinate our work with them. That event, or that project, the governor has called for a 50-year vision for the state of Oregon, so it's a natural fit. Oregon benchmarks on page 85, this is the second broad area of work for the Progress Board. This is the bread and butter work of the Progress Board because the benchmarks keep Oregonians focused on how well Oregon, the state, is doing towards the goals in Oregon Shines. And there are three goals to Oregon Shines. Quality jobs for all Oregonians, which is the economy-related piece. Engaged, caring, and safe communities. And the third one is healthy, sustainable surroundings. You may recognize this as the triple bottom line that is often used in sustainability talk. The Oregon benchmarks have often been considered measures of sustainability. There are 91 Oregon benchmarks. You can see them listed out in text form on page 86. Page 87, you'll see the biennial benchmark reports that we've put out since the early 1990s. That's a screenshot of the most recent one, and of course, the new one will come out in a couple of months. Page 88 is a graphic of how state agencies, I mentioned before, linking to Oregon benchmarks. They self-link to Oregon benchmarks for each one of their key performance measures if they view that key performance measures as providing a contribution to achieving an Oregon benchmark, then they link that, and you'll see that link in your key performance measure forms in your notebook. You can see here the range of goals, the number of benchmarks within those goals, and the kind of the altitude perspective, the Oregon benchmark goals and benchmarks and goals being at the 30,000 foot level, figuratively speaking, and the agency key performance measures being at, figuratively speaking, at the 20,000 foot level. Keeping in mind that some agencies do not have a pertinent Oregon benchmark linkage, particularly licensing agencies, regulatory types of agencies may not have a societal quality of life benchmark that they can link to. That's not their fault, that's just the way the benchmarks are designed to look at quality of life. Those agencies link, of course, to their mission and goals.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rita, you made an interesting comment there about licensing agencies not having anything to do with quality of life and that sort of thing. But isn't the purpose of a regulatory agency that licenses people to do whatever it is that they do to help improve and protect the public, to make sure that their quality of life is not degraded in some way?
I would agree with you 100%. We have a group of agencies that are in that category that are working on, I'm not sure how active this work group is, but there has been a lot of talk over the years about creating societal level measures for that kind of agency. If you had to categorize that kind of work, it would, to me, go into the public safety, consumer protection arena. And we just, that might be something that we can look at in Oregon Shines 3, which will include a pretty much a wholesale relook at the benchmarks to make sure that they're aligning properly with the goals and the strategies that are being produced for Oregon Shines 3. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, for now. Yeah.
On page 89, you'll see an example of how partners both in and out of state government link to an Oregon benchmark. This example is net job growth. It's benchmark number 4. And you can see there are quite a few Oregon state agencies that link to that benchmark. But there are also private sector partners, including the Oregon Business Council, the Education Roundtable, local governments. I can say that there's quite a bit of interest in counties to create local benchmark targets and local benchmarks for their work as well. Page 90, Oregon Progress Board coordinates the Oregon Population Survey, which is a 5,000 household survey every biennium. There are 17 agencies that contribute and partner on the design, the funding, and the analysis of the survey. The DAS, Office of Economic Analysis, is the technical advisor to us on this project. Many partner agencies use data to inform their policy decisions, and an example of that is the Oregon Health Policy and Research Office. They use it to do their work on health insurance. Progress Board uses the data to feed data to about 17 of the Oregon benchmarks. So if we were unable to carry on the tradition of the POP survey, we would have to find another way to populate those, find data for those 17 benchmarks or drop those 17 benchmarks. The third area that the Progress Board works in is the Key Performance Measure System for the State of Oregon. We developed the original Key Performance Measure guidelines in 2002 based on House Bill 3358. Excuse me. We continue to update the guidelines and the forms for the biennial budget instructions to state agencies, and we also work with state agencies as they fill out their forms We are, in essence, have served as a gatekeeper. Agencies submit those forms to us. We try to make sure the forms are filled out correctly and with the right measures. And if they are not, we work with the agencies. We are working most of all to transfer these roles and functions and key performance measurement to both the Budget and Management Division of DAS and to Legislative Fiscal Office.
Could I ask you something? Could I ask you to finish up?
Yes. The key performance measure of DAS that we link up to is the customer service measure. On page 95, you'll see that the Oregon Progress Board itself has a work plan with five goals, and within each of those goals, there are several objectives. The executive director, I write a quarterly executive director report, and that's posted on our website. The prioritized list is fairly simple. The POP survey is second in priority to the basic operations of the Progress Board. Budget drivers in page 97 and 0709 will be focusing on Oregon Shines 3. We're working on a public-private partnership for that. The Oregon Population Survey, there may be some additional complications and therefore additional costs to accommodate vulnerable populations who are increasingly using cell phones that are not listed, and therefore they tend to be underrepresented in a telephone survey where purchase lists cover landlines. Budget overview, we're about 40% in personal services and about 60% services and supplies. On page 99, you'll see that about half of our budget is general funds. That's the basic operational budget. The other half is other funds, and those are the funds we raise from our partners for the Oregon Population Survey. On page 100, you'll see the major quality improvement effort that we're doing is automating Oregon benchmark reporting online. Less data lag, less human error, drill down to benchmark partners, and more user-friendly benchmark displays. Future direction, page 101, Oregon Shines 3. Again, working on that public-private partnership and more effective use of technology to increase quality and reduce costs. And then the last page has to do with efficiencies. If we need to do a reduction, we suggest it would come out of the Oregon Population Survey, but that would then limit the options that we have with that survey. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry to rush you. I wanted to give George half of the time that he had originally been delegated. Wound up not being able to quite make that. Maybe he'll be able to do it a little less than half of it. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your courtesy. I think we can get through it. We're actually pretty straightforward as far as the budget goes for the Budget Management Division. So I think in 20 minutes we might be able to cover this. If you'll turn to page 103. Oh, sorry. Dallas, this is I'm George Naughton. I'm the Administrator of Budget and Management Division. If you turn to page 103, we'll begin the section on my division. The purpose of Budget and Management Division is to provide statewide leaders and the public with objective and accurate information for the wise use of state resources. If you look on page 103, you'll see that we're organized into four sections, which we'll talk about in a little bit very, very briefly. And then you also see our statutory authority at the bottom of page 103. Turning to page 104, you'll see the key services that we provide. I'll highlight three of them. We are the agent or the division that's responsible for creating the governor's recommended budget every 2 years. We work with the Legislative Fiscal Office to establish statewide budget policy. Shortly after you go home, Legislative Fiscal Office and Budget and Management Division will sit down and talk about how statewide budget policy should be set up for the next cycle. So we work very closely on that. And then the third part is once you go home, my division works to monitor agency spending during the interim. So we will be the ones during the allotment process that monitors how agencies are actually spending compared to what their budgets are and act as an early warning system, if you will, on if agencies are overspending their budgets. On page 105, you'll see our organization chart. We're organized at the bottom into four basic sections. At the far right box on the bottom, you'll see our budget section, which is really analogous to your legislative fiscal office. I have a series of analysts, Kay Erickson is one next to me, who has assigned state agencies to understand what their missions are, what their goals are, what their business services are, what the challenges are that they face, the strength of their management team, their financial information, all with the purpose of understanding when we create the budget for that agency how many resources they actually need. Over on the far left, you'll see two boxes, the ORBITS project, which is the Oregon Budget Information Tracking System, which is a relational database that keeps all of the budget information for the state of Oregon. That is a project that began in 1999. You will see a package that we'll discuss later on for the final phase of that development. The budget development project will finish at the end of the 2007-09 biennium, and we'll have a package to talk about that. Next to that, or the second box on the left, is a statewide budget and reporting section. There are six staff in there who really audit agency submittals to make sure that what agencies turn in is consistent with that budget policy that Legislative Fiscal Office and Budget and Management Division established. And finally, the second box from the right at the bottom is our capital investment section. Works very closely with the Treasurer's Office on statewide budget, on statewide debt management policies, and we provide some guidance to agencies on that.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Sure.
If I may. Thank you. George, with regards to the statewide budget and reporting section, is this the section that would be receiving information from agencies on relative to positions that have been not filled and that they don't intend to fill, but they're going to use the money for something else?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, we do, on a quarterly basis, produce a vacancy report, which we then send to the Legislative Fiscal Office. And they have, if you talk with Mr. Rocco, he has a series of those reports that we send on a quarterly basis. I think we're about a month behind for the most recent report, which is for the period of July through September of this current year. But Mr. Rocco has those reports prior to that period. And we're working on that last report now.
Great. If I could, there's a proposed piece of legislation coming on that, but I'd like to talk to you.
Okay, Mr. Chair, on page 106, major accomplishments for 2005-07, I'm going to highlight just two here. The first one, obviously, is that we did complete and send out the governor's recommended budget for 2007-09. The other one, which we're actually very excited about as well, is the second bullet there, is that during the last 4 years and really completing at the end of this current 2005-07 budget cycle, we will have aligned the state's budget structures with its accounting structures. Prior to this time, we could not get a good report of an agency's actual spending to their budget because the accounting structures and the budget structures were not aligned. If you spend any time with finances, you understand that that doesn't help you very much for understanding what's happening in an organization. So for the last 4 years, and we'll complete it in June of this year, we will have those budget structures aligned, which will then feed into the last part of budget development with that ORBITS project, of syncing up and allowing our accounting systems and our budget systems to talk to one another so that we can get more real-time information. Page 107, you'll see the Department of Administrative Services strategic plan. And I'm going to turn to page 108 and show how budget and management links into those. The first one is goal one, which is excellent customer service. Budget and management division, for the most part, is a control function. At the same time, we have customers out there. Our primary customer is the governor's office and providing information to him. He or she, and the secondary customer is state agencies. We are the one that communicate budget policy guidelines to them and also provide the systems that allow them to maintain and track their budgets. The key focuses for us there is clear and consistent communication with all of our partners. Where we can, we try and find joint solutions with agencies, and finally, we strive to provide timely and accurate information to all of our customers. On page 109, you'll see effective policies with clear direction. As I mentioned earlier, budget development is actually a very long process. We released the budget instructions just about a year ago. By the time you all go home, it will be about 18 months that we've been in budget development. We have various stages throughout that process where we have to communicate with agencies as to what's happening. Many of the decisions that your Ways and Means Committee has made, Legislative Fiscal Office and Budget and Management Division communicate those decisions out to agencies. So we try and provide information as clearly as we can. On page 110, you'll see goal three is efficient and effective government infrastructure. Just 2 points here. The first one is that we provide oversight with agencies on capital investment purposes, and then also second, we are striving to provide ever better information through improvements to our budget system project, and we'll talk about that package in just a moment. On page 111, goal 4 is adaptable government for future generations. Just as an aside here, Budget and Management Division is fairly uniquely positioned to take staff in agencies who may be in the middle of their career, move them into places where they understand budget policy, they get some management tools under their belt, and then as they leave my organization, they typically go out into leadership positions throughout the rest of state government. There are about 3 staff that have recently left my staff that went on to be deputy directors of agencies, business services managers, a series of other things. So we, in essence, become a training ground for the next wave of state leaders that will be in front of you leading and providing leadership for state agencies. On page 112, you'll see the key performance measurements that Budget and Management Division directly links to. On page 112 and 113, you'll see the customer service measure. And our plan for 2007-09 to improve that measure is primarily providing better information to agencies. And we do think that the linking of the accounting and budget structures and those systems tying together will provide much better financial information for agencies and for legislative fiscal office and our shop. On page 114, this may strike you as a little odd that we'd include this here. It is basically the reliability of the Office of Economic Analysis's revenue forecast for the state. Really, from the technical expert's perspective, how accurate was that forecast? The reason we link it here and we show it is simply that one of the biggest things that could introduce variance to that forecast would be too much pressure coming from a budget shop, for example, to get the answer we want to see. We work very hard to keep a wall between our revenue forecasters and our budget forecasters to make sure that we get the best information we can. We all agree that those revenue forecasts may fluctuate, but we try to not make them fluctuate for political reasons or for the budget outcome that we want to see. So we work very hard to not make those adjustments. Page 115, you'll see the specific measures that tie to Budget and Management Division. I'm going to skip through those fairly quickly. Moving to page 116, you'll see the prioritized list of services within Budget and Management Division. The first one there is our operations, which is the analyst function within Budget and Management, and the audit function I mentioned to you earlier, which is the core of what we do. The second priority would be the capital investment section, and then the third priority is the ongoing budget development project that we're going to be having a package down below. Page 117, the 2 budget drivers unique to Budget and Management Division. The first one is debt service on the budget replacement project. That project was $7.2 million of certificate of participation proceeds. We will have the final payments for that system in May of 2010, so they will be built into our assessments for both the 07-09 period as well as a little bit into 09-11. And then the second bullet there is the other budget driver we have is stakeholder needs. As you and as the governor have additional information needs, we then staff around that. A great example is with the focus on performance measurement. Last budget cycle, Legislative Fiscal Office added an analyst position related to performance management. You'll see a package in this budget that does the same thing for Budget and Management Division. So as you have additional information needs, we have then additional needs for staffing or resources. Page 18 is just an overview of our revenues. There are basically 2. We primarily assess state agencies for the costs of the Budget and Management Division programs. And then second is those proceeds from the sale of certificates of participation for the budget development project. Page 119, you'll see that the vast bulk of the budget for Budget and Management Division is related to the personnel or the staff that perform this work. And then on 120, you'll see the budget for 2005-07 as compared to the budget for the governor has recommended for this division for 07-09. The drop that you see there is really the phase down of the Orbitz project, that budget replacement project. The core of what we did with budget and with the Orbitz system is replacing the previously antiquated budget the mainframe system. That work has primarily been completed, and we're now at the stage where we're just doing some cleanup on the project and providing some functionality that we did not currently have. But you see that the assessment goes down the budget for Budget and Management Division goes down because of that phasing down of the project. page 121, you'll see the quality improvement efforts during 05-07, the one we've already talked about, which is linking the budget or aligning the budget and accounting structures. The second one is that we have created an emergency board module for the budget system. Previously, the budget system did not allow, as the emergency board met and made changes to agency budgets, we did not have a mechanism to update the budget information in the state system. During 05-07, we completed that module and will be able to implement that during the next biennium. On page 22, you'll see that there is one piece of proposed legislation. This is the this is truly a cleanup measure. It's working its way through the Revenue Committee, I believe. In essence, under state law, money cannot be sent directly to counties. It has to go through an intermediary of a state agency. Currently, the law just says that for economic development funds that go to counties, it's supposed to be transferred to the counties. Practically, what happens is the money is transferred from the Lottery Commission to the Department of Administrative Services into an economic development fund, and then the Department of Administrative Services transfers it out to the county. All the proposed law change does is clarifies that that middle step occurs. So it's purely a housekeeping measure, no policy change to it.
Sure. May I ask, George, what's your take on that? In other words, what's the percentage that the agency then holds back from the payment out to the counties?
Actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Kummer, I do not believe we keep any of that money, but I would have to. We'll have to check into that and see.
You have to have some way
some administrative
paying,
cost.
Paying the person that writes the checks and deposits the money in the bank and all of that kind of stuff.
Mr.
Right?
Chair, Representative Kummer, let me check into that. I do not have the answer off the top of my head, but we'll bring an answer back to you tomorrow. Mr. Chair, on page 123, the future direction, there's a couple of these I just want to highlight. The first is that we are constantly trying to link statewide policy with budget development. As you heard Rita mention a minute ago, we're going to be moving performance management functions into budget and management division from the Progress Board. Like your legislative fiscal office, we've come to the point where we believe that that is a tool for budget development that we can use, and we're trying to link those up closer. So that's the first thing. The second is we've talked already about improving financial information for state agencies. Mr. Chair, on page 124, you'll see the first of three packages. These are going to go actually fairly quickly. The first one is the final phase of the Orbitz project that, as we talked about, the primary function there is linking up budget and actual information. And on page 125, you'll see how that links to our first, our customer service performance measure. If you notice there, our target for the agency is 90%. Budget and Management Division, our components of that have been closer to the 60s or 70s on customer service, how folks rate us. We believe that the improvements in this package will provide much better information, which will help us get toward that 90% target. On page 451, you'll see the first of two technical adjustments or policy packages. The first one, Mr. Ball already mentioned, which is transferring a support position from the director's office to the Budget and Management Division. Again, that's just simply moving the position to be in the same budget structure as their manager, so it's pretty clean. On page 128, you'll see package 453, which transfers a performance management position or creates a management position that's transferred from another division into Budget and Management Division so that the performance management functions can reside there. And finally, Mr. Chair, on page 129, you'll see the efficiencies for Budget and Management Division that are proposed or the program changes. Currently, we have a budget trainee program that we hire two recent graduates for the most part who have either just recently achieved their bachelor's degree or in some cases their master's degree, or in some cases we have PhDs or people that have passed the bar exam who want experience with state government. They do not have a lot of experience. So what they do is they come into this program, this trainee program, and we train them on how the state budgets, in essence, and some of the management tools that we use. And then for the most part, they go out either to agencies or to local government using that expertise that they've gained to improve governance in general. The benefit to us is that when they come to Budget and Management Division, we assign them the small other fund agencies, licensing boards, a number of fee-based programs. And what these two staff do during the course of that two-year period is they provide budget oversight for those small agencies that we would not otherwise be able to provide. So in a number of cases, you'll have these small programs that may have administrators that aren't used to managing a budget. These two analysts will work with those agencies, monitor them, make sure that they're not going to overspend, or if they are starting to overspend, start working on a management plan on how they can correct it. This is the elimination of this program is what we put on the table here. I will be clear with you, though, that if that function disappeared, it would have an impact on the oversight provided to those small agencies. With that, Mr. Chair, I think I am completed 5 minutes early. If there's any questions, Mr. Chair, I'll be open to you.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Edwards.
Thank you. Regarding this, the efficiencies, the two trainee positions that you were just speaking of, it seems to me that recent graduates would be among the most likely age in the workforce to not really be clear on what it is that they want to do with their newfound degree in education. And so I'm wondering, could you speak to how many actually stay in and move on to other agencies after going through this program,
mm-hmm.
as you have spoken? It sounds like that would be the ideal situation that you would like to see, but how many end up saying, well, state government isn't for me?
Actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, I think it's a great question. You have two graduates of that program sitting in this room today. I went through that program in the early the mid-1990s. I have a law degree. I knew I wanted to come back to start in state government. I spent 2 years trying to figure out what it was about, and I got hooked and came back into the system. Deputy Director for the Department of Administrative Services, Chris Couch, directly behind me, also was a graduate of that program 2 years ahead of me. One of your legislative fiscal analysts was in the same trainee class that I was. Typically, the pattern that occurs is that people will come into this program, they'll understand what we do, and then they may move into agencies. A lot of them actually move out to local government, and then they will end up coming back. That's what happened with your legislative fiscal office staff that you have. She actually went to the state of New York, and then when she moved back to Oregon, she came back into state government and then ultimately got picked up by your legislative fiscal office. So we have a number of them. I actually keep a list. And for the last 3 or 4 years, those folks have moved out of state government. They're just now starting to come back.
Thank you.
Just for information purposes for the committee, could you provide us that list?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate that. Other questions?
When you talk about oversight provided to small agencies, about how many is that you wouldn't have the oversight?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, those two analysts typically carry a load of between 12 and 17 agencies each. So it's probably in the range of 30 agencies, plus or minus.
Follow up for
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple of things. One is, George, you mentioned, I'm trying to find it here because I made a notation, that under the customer service goal of the strategic plan on page 108, you mentioned that fostering excellent customer relations, to listen to the agencies, work with them to create budget solutions that ideally meet both their needs and those of the governor's office and the LFO. Can you help me understand agency needs for what purpose?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krummel, typically what happens during budget development is that agencies at their agency request budget stage will ask for whatever they want to. So at that point, when we try and balance out the state budget, there is significantly more need or requests than we actually have in actual resources. So what we do is my analysts then basically create a recommended budget where they cut agency expenditures back, cut into agency programs. Typically what happens after that is we have an appeal process where we work back and forth with the agencies where they will come to us and they will say, we understand that you need to cut our budget back by X millions of dollars, for example. instead of the reduction that you proposed, here's an alternate that we think might make better sense from a programmatic perspective. We had the Oregon Youth Authority do that for us this last time. We had proposed some reductions. They came back to us and said, we think that we can be better served putting some of those reductions, not in the program you suggested, but actually taking a cut in a different area and moving that resources out in the community because it will provide a better prevention service. So where we can, we work with the agencies to find a budget solution that still gets us within a balanced budget but allows the agency to maybe move the program priorities that they have.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
So these are things that the agencies have identified that will serve the public better? Is that what we're after here? I guess when I see the words that meet their needs, meaning the agencies and the governor's office, I'm thinking, where does the public come into this? They're the ones that are paying the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not based on what the agency has perceived as being a need identified by the public or somehow through requests and that sort of thing, I have a hard time with that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Krummel, the packages in question that they wanted to advance, for example, were packages that were included in their agency-requested budget, that they had gotten feedback from counties and the public were important priorities. And the negotiations back and forth were, these are hard priorities for our customers. We would rather keep this and maybe make a reduction somewhere else. So the packages or the things that they were asking to be financed were, in fact, priorities for their customers.
Thank you. And just as a follow-up, Mr. Chair, it's not really a follow-up to that, but looking at the key performance measures.
Let's stay with that for half a second.
Pardon me?
I say let's stay with your question for just a half a second.
Oh, okay.
Do you check with these others, these agencies, or these who have requested this, whether or not they have a commitment, and whether this, in fact, does relate to Representative Crumble's concern, the public?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, typically the way the budget process works on the executive branch side, and I don't know as much about how your process works inside, typically the first phase or analyst recommended budgets is that any new package that is proposed, especially that require general fund or discretionary lottery funds, the very first step is we say no to everything, basically as a front part, and then we cut your budgets on top of that. So the very first part of the process is not a very pleasant one for anyone.
Glad to hear that.
Mr. Chair, the next part of that is through that appeal process. We actually come back, and one of the questions that we ask the agencies is we talk to them about what their customer service needs are and why these packages that they want to restore are so important. We do not, for the most part, go directly out to the customers themselves and truth test that, if you will. But we do raise those questions with the agencies and with the governor's office to as much as we can find out why it's important to them.
Another question, Mr. Chair.
Over.
I understand. I'll make it real quick. And if they would, and this is more of a rhetorical question. It's been a long time coming that the legislature has actually utilized the Oregon Shines and the benchmarks to process budgeting. And to connect the budget to where it is that Oregon Shines says we want to go. But one of the things with regards to the key performance measures that I kind of keep coming back to, and I will keep coming back to, and that is, so what does this mean? What's the outcome that we're expecting to see with a particular performance measure, and you know, what do the percentages really represent? And that's a question that I don't need to answer right now, but I think we need to keep in mind as we go through this process.
Any other burning questions? No, thank you. It's just a comment to members of the committee if we can. I'd like to try to keep the questions relevant to the particular sections that are being discussed and hold some of the questions that may apply to subsequent discussions so that we don't get bogged down with that. And I know morning with the director sitting there, it was awfully easy to want to go after a lot of questions with the director, and I assume we'll have other time to do that. So with that, unless you have something pertinent that you want to add, Lindsay?
I appreciate the questions that the committee has been asking. I think they're important, and we'll get answers to those questions to you by tomorrow morning.
Thank you. With that, we are adjourned.